to, for the people who I don't recognize, maybe to out yourselves, who has not heard about 810 or seen an in-depth presentation about single payer and SB 810? Please raise your hand. The old one. Okay, but you don't get to raise your hand. and you're wearing a healthcare for all button. So is there anyone here who doesn't really understand what we talk about when we talk about single payer? There's really only a couple people, but I'll try to keep that quick. Well, and I'll also orient then my conversation to people who do know. So I am not only staffing SB 810 this year, I'm also staffing the budget. Yeah. And I'm getting to participate in some really incredible conversations around what we do facing a $24 billion deficit. Our state revenue essentially dropped by a quarter at the drop of a pin. And what we're faced with today, and I don't mean we, the legislature, I mean we are faced with, is what do we do? You know, those dollars fund what I consider to be our social assets. And the conversation in the state seems to be about how we're gonna just make these cuts. And there's very little conversation around what do we really value and what is the purpose of all of this spending? Does it have value or not? And when you see what we've been talking about today, we talked about the public health care programs that are being funded with that money, the education dollars that are going to potentially go away, the corrections budget that we're cutting rehabilitation programs out of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, to the point where my boss, Senator Leno, says, well, I guess we should just cut off the rehabilitation off of the corrections department because we're not going to be doing any more rehabilitation. And what we've seen is that this completely relates to healthcare policy because the growing cost of healthcare costs are a huge chunk of the California budget. Not only for healthy families and Medi-Cal and all of the other public programs that you learned about today, but also for our teachers and our firefighters and our policemen and me. You know, every single state employee, we buy a lot of healthcare for those people. We buy their healthcare premiums, and then when we retire, we pay for their healthcare premiums for life. And the healthcare costs are growing 4 times faster than wages every single year. How do we pay for public programs? With taxes that are a function of wages, a fairly direct function of wages. So if healthcare costs grow 4 times faster than wages, and we're buying a lot of healthcare with taxes, then you can do the math. We are set up to dismantle every single public program that we care about. Every single public program that has been in place since essentially the Great Depression. When we responded to economic crisis then with new programs. When we were in recession, we responded to that by investing in people, by making people feel safe, by making them feel like, I'm not gonna lose everything if I lose my job. And so they kept spending. They kept, you know, they kept the economy alive because they started to feel safe. And now today, we're doing the exact opposite of what we did then. We have a recession, we have a lot of fear, and rather than being able to rely on our public programs today, every single family is fearing that they are going to lose everything if they lose their job, and many of them are. And today, if you lose your job, you lose your health care, and you probably lose a lot more, your house, potentially your life. And so the stakes are very high right now, and this budget crisis is unlike anything, I mean, obviously that I've ever seen. But it's unlike anything that I talk to, anyone I talk to has ever seen. So all of the people I work with in the Capitol who've been here for 30 years, everybody says that this is unlike anything they've ever seen. So I want to talk about 810 today, because that is the only possible way that we are going to ever be able to afford a functional healthcare system that protects us. And that is true. But in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I want to tell you that this is the time that if you care about government and you care about your social infrastructure and you care about having a society that takes care of people, you had better stand up and say that to everybody who will listen and not be shy about it to anyone. And to say, I want taxes, yes. I want government. I like government. And to stop this nonsense about we don't like government, because that is the argument that is going to undo everything that does keep us safe, every middle class family. So, and what does that look like specifically? That means I want letters. I suggest that we write letters to our newspapers, to our local TV stations, to our statewide TV stations, as well as the legislature. But the legislature gets it. Daryl Steinberg gets it. He's going to fight as hard as he can. What your job is to create the political space for him to do the best thing that he wants to do, that he can do. And that is meaning that we have to create a sense that there is a really big call for true reform in how we fund our public assets. Because those public assets create wealth. This whole notion that if we raise taxes, that's going to slow the economy is a false dilemma. Because if we lay off 60,000 people who take care of seniors in their homes, what does that do to the economy? We are poised to jump our unemployment rate by 3 percentage points in one day if the budget goes as it's going. So don't talk to me about economic slowdown if we raise taxes on oil companies a little bit. I'm sorry. We threaten the economic recovery of the whole nation if we do not act in protecting this infrastructure. So these are our state parks. These are roads and healthcare programs. And it's funding people who care for seniors in their home and care for the disabled. And so not to mention the human consequences of letting these programs go. It's our economy that we need to protect as well. So I hope that you write letters and do whatever you can think of to do to change that. So on to SB 810. You know, SB 810, to those who don't know much about it, it's a big healthcare reform. You know, you've heard all about how screwed up our healthcare system is, which it is. It's not serving at least 20 to 30% of our population sufficiently at all. But even the rest of us are receiving substandard care. And I want to break it down. What is single payer? Really simply, it is different than our current system in this way. The current system segregates us into many different groups based on how sick we are likely to get. So some people go to Medicare if they're over 65, or if they're disabled, or they go to Medi-Cal if they're low income and disabled. And those are public programs that are taking care of the most likely population to get sick. And then we segregate them into lots of other groups, and they're all called payers. Medicare is a payer, Medi-Cal is a payer, Health Net, PacifiCare, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, all of these are payers. So we have a multiple payer system today, and each one of us gets stuck into a category that is associated with a payer. And that the purpose of the segregation is so that that payer can figure out whether it can profit off of providing your care. Someone who has a lot of health care needs, doesn't pay a high premium, are they very profitable to that payer? No. How do you make money off of paying more than the money that they pay you? That's not a good business model. So that is kind of the basic reason why we think this multiple payer model doesn't work. Because as soon as that payer you anymore. And that means that the market isn't going to compete for you. The market doesn't try to serve people who are sick. And so instead, they compete for me. That's great for me. They compete for young people, healthy, don't necessarily need a lot of care. And then they offer me all these opportunities to use medical care, knowing that I probably won't need them. But then I end up using more care than I otherwise would have. And it actually makes me less healthy too. And that's what the research shows, is that our healthcare system, because it directs the resources to the healthy people, they die more often and get sick more often and don't do as well because they're staying longer in the hospital because they've got all this good insurance. They get more services that they normally wouldn't have gotten. And those services actually can, you know, healthcare is not, medical care, as any physician will tell you, has side effects. It's dangerous to get a lot of healthcare. So directing a lot of resources to healthy people and then avoiding the sick people is exactly the opposite of what you want a healthcare system to do. So single payer just means instead of segregating people into all these different categories, we put them into one category. And everyone pays something in based on their income instead of a premium, which is a flat tax, basically. And everyone just pays in a percentage of their income. And then everyone has healthcare coverage. Simple, done, end of story, you're covered, period. We no longer have to figure out where you go, what clinic, you know, what clinic program we can get you into. Yes.
If you can't pay, if you have no income?
Then you, if you have no income, you are still eligible. The eligibility is based on residency in the state, regardless.
Does the state or county or city have to pick up the cost of the uninsured?
The risk is spread to everyone. So everyone pays something in if they have income, and it pays for everyone, regardless of whether they have income. So, which is one of the huge advantages, because for me, for example, I'm going to pay more, probably, under single payer than I do now, because I work for the state of California, and I pay nothing. So I'll pay a little bit more. And
That's not really true.
No, it's not.
It's out of your
absolutely
paycheck.
It is out of my paycheck. It's absolutely true. It's a reduced wages. But as far as I know, I don't have to pay anything. Whereas under a single payer system, I probably would have to pay something. But what I'm buying with that is I know that if I lose my job, I'm still covered. Whereas currently, if I get cancer and I can't work, I'm going to the clinic. And then they're gonna have to find a way to cover my services. You know, and then we have an endlessly underfunded safety net because there's not all the sick people end up out of care. And there are so many examples I can tell you of consumers who've been in the paid system, in the insured community, most of their life, literally until they get sick. And then the moment they get sick, there's all kinds of mechanisms that they end up falling out. Some people get to stay. They find their way still in the insured and they're okay and they get taken care of. But many, many, many people end up just dropping out of the insured system once they get sick.
In terms of what is covered, mm-hmm. are you talking in a single payer system of providing all care, dental, hearing, vision, and mm-hmm. health? Yeah.
So the question is, are we talking about providing comprehensive health care in a single payer system?
Right.
Yes, I mean, SB 810 guarantees a very comprehensive level of benefits.
Including education.
It does have some funding for education. It has all of the ancillary health care benefits that you would expect. Anything that is medically appropriate is a covered benefit. Now that said, not every single payer system in the world does it that way.
Right.
Many single payer systems only provide a very basic level of health care, and then you still have to buy your way up from there. The fundamental piece of single payer is not, is the change from many payers to one payer. And what that means is that you actually focused healthcare spending where it is best used, on the sickest population where you're gonna get the best bang for the buck. That's the fundamental thing about single payer.
So does it, does the payment go directly to the doc then, so the intermediary is cut out?
Right, so the question, the next question is, how does the payment system in single payer work? Does it go directly to the physician? And the answer is yes, the system would negotiate directly with providers, hospitals, doctors, all the same delivery system that you currently have access to today, you would still have access to under the single payer model.
Sarah, why don't you clarify what the caps are, the salary caps? That makes it clear. What a person doesn't begin to pay a premium until he reaches, is it $7,000,
so,
monthly in salary?
Well,
and then this, they also clarified what the employer's obligation is. Because a lot of people say, well, we can't have free health care, but everybody pays for it.
Yeah, everyone who has any level of income pays for it. And most people have income at some point. You know, and they've paid in at some point. So we have a model of financing, but it is just, let me be clear, that it is not set in stone in the bill. What SB 810 is the plan for where the money goes and how the money gets sent to the providers. It lays out your benefits and it lays out the governance. It is not the specific tax. That is not what is in the bill. That tax is just your premium. And just like your premiums change based on year to year, based on the cost of healthcare, you know, in the current system, your premiums are going up every single year. The single payer system, the year that we enact single payer, that is the year that the specific taxes will have to be determined. Because I can't tell you how much healthcare costs are going to be growing if we do this in 2018. When I started working on single payer 8 years ago, we were spending 12% of our GDP on healthcare. Guess what we're spending today? Does anyone know?
16?
18. I heard 17. 17.1. When I started, it was 12%. That was less than 8 years ago. Now we have jumped to 17.1% of our GDP. And that means 17.1% of our wealth. And very soon it's going to be 20. And then it's going to be 25. And I mean, and how high can it go is really the question. Before, you know, yeah, we're going to spend 100% and then food will be a covered health benefit. Yes.
I wondered how do people get the care they need? And how are the disbursements handled under this 810 system?
How will people get the care they need? And how are the disbursements? So that leads me to want to clarify that this bill doesn't radically change the delivery system at all. I mean, really, the way that you access healthcare today is exactly the way that you'll access it under single payer. Blue Cross does not provide you health care. So many people think they get their health care from Blue Cross. No. You get your health care from your doctor. You get your health care from your hospital. Blue Cross just pays the bill. And that's all this is. We are the payer of the bill. And we would negotiate reimbursements with provider groups. They would be able to collectively bargain for fair reimbursements. And that is a huge shift for doctors who currently just have to take what they can get. This is a lot more power for doctors than they, under this model, than they have now. But for you, the patient, you actually have more choice because you get to go to any doctor in the whole state. If they have room for you, you can go.
A good comparison I heard was now administrative costs are like 25% to 30% as they are now, whereas VA is really a single payer situation and they run usually under 15%.
Oh, Medicare runs 3 to 5.
Big money, 3 to 5 Medicare.
Yeah, administration, that's that's obvious. It's like a hospital. Any hospital administrator will tell you that about a third of their payroll is just administration, people doing paying the bills. And there was a new Journal of Health Affairs study that said doctors spend $31 billion just interacting with insurance companies. And this is really great. I got a press release from the insurance industry bragging about how they spend $16.9 billion every year on payroll in California. The entire budget of the state of California is about $100 billion, and that funds our schools, our parks, our police officers, our roads, our capital, our museums, our every single thing we care about for $100 billion. And insurance companies spend 16.9 just on payroll. That isn't including their high rises and their $1 million executive compensations and their marketing costs. They spend 16.9 billion just on payroll every year to pay bills. So when anyone that talks to you about government waste and government inefficiency, it's like, are you joking? Because in fact, I think we get an excellent bang for our buck with our state government. $100 billion for all the services we get. That's excellent. Oh, yes.
I have a question.
Okay.
Can you hear me all right? Mm-hmm.
Just speak very closely to it.
Closely. Oh, okay. The current system requires that doctors register a bill to get paid. It's called fee-for-service. Does this bill speak to retaining a fee-for-service system, or is there the possibility of moving it to a incentive-based payment system where the doctor is reimbursed when healing occurs, you know, something like that?
Well, this is a really important detail about how you structure a healthcare system effectively and how do you pay for it. Because the problem with what's called fee for service, which is every time a doctor does a service, it gets paid a certain amount. The challenge there is many would argue that it incentivizes doctors to just do more services because that's how they get paid, as opposed to integrated health delivery systems based on capitation, which is a payment that I get for a period of time of serving per patient. That gives you an incentive to treat the patient and to minimize services. So most people that I speak with agree that a capitated or salary-based model is better for healthcare. However, doctors are very opposed, or some of them are. Some like it and some don't. Kaiser doctors, they obviously like the salary, they love it, they would never go with anything else. So under 810, we maintain all the different ways that doctors currently get reimbursed. They can choose fee-for-service, they can choose capitated, they can be part of integrated systems where they get a salary. So Kaiser still totally exists as it's structured now. But we would probably incentivize in some way those integrated models and create bonuses for them, particularly to the extent that they are successful at containing cost. If they do a good job and they're reducing health expenditures and they're treating patients well and their consumers are happy, well then they should get a bonus. You know, and so we are going to that is in the system to try to incentivize that model of paying. However, fee for service would still exist because many doctors want it. Yes.
Good.
Oh, $16.1 billion on
payroll.
Mm-hmm. $16.9 billion on health insurance payroll, not including high rises and their CEO boat and golf trips.
Marketing, yeah.
Well, if we imagined that single payer in SB 10 were actually passed and overnight, those people on that payroll didn't
Absolutely.
Have a job.
That was their point. That's why they did this press
release. That's their pushback and that's their resistance. Is there some consolation? consolation prize for making the insurance companies go away, so they'll stop nagging us about this?
Oh, they won't stop, but what do we say to the people? I mean, I've got friends who work in the insurance industry who do underwriting, you know, and they would lose their jobs, and they're actually okay with it, but they're tired of telling people with HIV that they can't have any health insurance. However, you know, it's true. That's a lot of money, a lot of payroll that we have to be concerned about. So my answer to that question is, A, we are not reducing healthcare spending by that amount. We are shifting it. So we are taking that money and shifting it into other payroll. So while we are eliminating jobs over here, at the exact same time, we are creating many more jobs on this side. What types of jobs? We are creating, we are going to be investing in electronic infrastructure, computer jobs, Silicon Valley jobs, you know, software technologies, computer technologies, to computer technologies that are also exportable to other countries because they've got single-payer healthcare systems. And so we would have the opportunity of creating new industries that would actually allow us to be more competitive internationally, as opposed to wasting that money on bureaucratic jobs. And so those bureaucratic jobs absolutely there'd be a transition, and the bill does allow for some transition. But by creating all of these new jobs, what you have is a situation where a lot of people, I have a lot of friends who were in the computer industry 5 years ago and now can't get a job doing that, but would love to go back. So then if Silicon Valley suddenly was having lots of investment and needed a lot of new computer people, they're hiring all the computer people, those computer people leave their jobs, and then these people fill, and it all kind of shifts throughout the system. Now there's a transition time, but in an economic sense, absolutely there is a job flow that you're creating, and you're actually creating more jobs.
Sarah, didn't the California Nurses Association just complete a research report about the jobs that would be created if we shifted to single payer?
And I can't remember their actual statistic was.
Yeah, it was millions.
Yeah, they found that they did.
There was online.
So. Yeah, the California Nurses Association did publish a study that showed that there would be incredibly higher numbers of job creation in the millions compared to. And in fact, it was like equal. It almost matched.
Yeah.
The job loss
right.
over the during the recession was equal to the job creation just from having single payer. So that's a good point to make sure.
Sarah, I just wanted you to comment, if you could. You guys are lucky. You guys live with nice Democratic representation. Other than Chico, we have a rather obnoxious state senator who. Very publicly wrote in the paper about how terrible SB 10 was, and it was going to cost $200 billion. Would you comment about the fact that we're already going to be spending $200 billion in the next couple of years per year
under
the current system?
Yeah, because that's probably the most common talking point that you're going to get from Republicans now is it's going to cost $200 billion. $200 billion, the reason that that number is being used is because that's healthcare spending. That's all that means, is that because, you know, that is what that's what tomorrow's level of healthcare spending is estimated to be, about $200 billion. So when we have a single-payer healthcare system, they say the cost is $200 billion because that's how much our healthcare system will cost. So it's a really disingenuous criticism because, A, over half of that healthcare spending is already public money. So Medi-Cal, Healthy Families, all of that is already money that we have in the general fund. Well, had. that's already current spending. The second half of that also is current spending, money that we are all paying to insurance companies that would instead flow into this system. So that $200 billion estimate is a total misrepresentation, and in fact, there are many studies, empirical studies, that show that there would be savings. And the correct way of asking the question is, what does it cost? Is what is the impact on healthcare spending? what is the impact of single payer on healthcare spending? And the Congressional Budget Office, the General Accounting Office, the Lewin Report, and the Legislative Analyst Office, all of those entities have found that single payer reduces healthcare spending. So this saves money. People who say it costs $200 billion are very much misleading you. Well, we have somebody here, and then I'll go to Manny, okay.
Regardless of how much the current system costs, will the new system cost more or less?
Right, that's what I just said. Yeah.
So it will cost a comparable amount?
It will cost less. That's what I just said.
It will cost less.
The General Accounting Office, which is the federal, you know, that's a federal institution that performs studies on our global budget. The General Accounting Office, the Congressional Budget Office, the Legislative Analyst, the LAO, and our own Lewin study are four sources. There are more, but those are four very credible sources that say that single payer reduces healthcare spending. And then you can also point out, well, this is just what is. If you look at every other industrial country, you see that healthcare spending is about half what ours is per person, as well as a percentage of our economy, and yet they cover everyone, and their healthcare outcomes are better, and they have the same access to physicians, and everything else is all the same, and yet they spend half. So,
I need clarification on this.
Mm-hmm.
SB 810 will eliminate the insurance industry?
No, actually that's not true. It won't because, well, I mean, the insurance industry is automobile insurance, life insurance.
Health insurance.
It would really eliminate them for all intents and purposes.
Yes.
Now, when you're talking to people who don't think that's a good idea, you might have to talk.
People.
You know, we have to be able to talk to people who don't agree with us on that point. And so I'm going to say something that you're not going to like right now, but I'm going to say it because it could be what we have to choose. And in single payer systems around the country, this is often what you will see. They do have insurance companies. They do have them, but those insurance companies don't get to pick and choose who they take. They don't get to decide what benefits you get at all. They don't have control over your utilization. They're not insurance companies in the way we think of them. All they are discrete units who pay their administrative kind of third-party administrators, which we use all the time in government. There are many examples of California state government that uses third-party, I mean, these clinics, these community clinics. Those are third-party entities providing healthcare. You know, it's not that we hate any aspect of third-party administration. The thing that I hate about insurance companies is that they make money by denying care. And they make money by avoiding people who are sick. And they make money by making bad decisions. So under single payer, you could have a situation where the state contracts with Blue Shield for their computer infrastructure to just let them pay bills. They don't decide your benefits. They don't decide your utilization. They don't make any decisions that really matter, but they are the administrators. Personally, I would take that deal because that is good enough for me. I don't want to advocate for that, but that might be what we end up with because we don't have the computers in the state of California right now. We don't have that infrastructure, so that's fine. But we have to really change health insurance. So just so you know, we can say also, it doesn't totally necessarily eliminate insurance, but it pretty much does. Yeah.
I think it's important to understand the dynamics of what's going on, really. Because what's driving this non-healthcare system in the United States is profit and greed. It's not delivery of services. That's number one. Number two, the latest data, and this is what I think has been driving Obama pushing for healthcare reform, and I don't agree with his proposal or what they're talking about is the projection, and everybody acknowledges the projection, that over the next 10 years, we're currently spending about $2.4 trillion a year on healthcare in the United States. That's projected to double in 10 years. Double in 10 years. And that's what this whole system is about in Washington. I think the best example of what would happen here in California is the Lewin study on SB 840. Because the Lewin study demonstrated, based on their projections and their analysis, and they are very sharp people, that California, once implemented, would save $350 billion over 10 years, and everybody would be covered universally.
Absolutely.
You would not make the invidious distinctions that we currently do. We designate different categories of people as expendable or available for less care than the rest of the people
are. I think that you brought up something really important, Manny, which is, you know, this is an Obama, this is linked to the Obama event. So how does this fit in with what Obama is talking about? So I want to spend... I want to talk a little bit about that. So Obama has a proposal that would maintain private insurance companies in their current form, where they still get to pick and choose people, they still get to do utilization review, all of that, which we hate. And that we still spend a lot of money on administration under his proposal. He has said he supports single payer. So let's start there. Obama does support single payer. He feels it's not politically feasible at the national level. Our job is to make it politically feasible.
Right.
But it's not. And most people acknowledge that. Even the CNA acknowledges that. Everybody acknowledges that it's not politically feasible at the national level. It is politically feasible at the state level in many states. So that what we are asking from Obama is that he learn from single payer in crafting his compromise plan and incorporate important regulations and protections for consumers, establish the public option. Now, some people are going to disagree. I'm okay with the public option if they do certain things.
Yeah.
If they do certain things, and Manny doesn't agree with any of it. But I think if we call, you can choose whether you want to call for single payer or nothing, that's fine. But you'll have to accept that for this year, it's nothing then. And I don't really choose that personally. I choose something that is good and really can move forward over nothing. And there's a question about what he's going to do, if it's going to be good. But what I'm hearing, and this is what my former boss, Senator Kuhl, just called me yesterday to say, is that the pressure of single-payer supporters is working in Washington, D.C., and that it really is working. She said that several sources have told her that all of the pressure on single-payer has been effective, and they are going to push, and that they are now at a political place where public option is really probably going to happen. And that a strong public option, that's the language, that's the term of art, strong public option. Not any public option, a strong public option.
I want to just one follow-up point. This is an officially designated Obama session, because they're hearing it all over the country now, today, about recommendations to Obama about health care. My recommendation is that we vote unanimously in support of the single payer option. And that's the message that goes back to Obama and the campaign. So I move that. I need a second.
Second.
All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Abstentions.
You voted no, Manny?
And I just want to say something about this so-called public option. If any of you have heard Dr. Himmelstein on Bill Moyer 2 weeks ago, talked about how no, we will not bring costs down with the public option because doctors will still have to deal with 114 different plans. They'll have to maintain their structure to deal with all this administrative
junk. That's correct. And so what I would respond to that is We're right, and that's why we know that we don't have to worry about them doing some stupid plan that's not going to really contain costs. At the end of the day, we have to do single payer. So what we need from Obama is to do a strong public option, and we need that the federal legislation allow for states to do more, allow for states to do single payer. Those are the two things that we are demanding from Obama, in my opinion, as well as my boss, Senator Leno, as well as Senator Kuhl. So those are the two main asks at the federal level. And then at the state level, we push hard and continue to fight for SB 810. And then Charlene is going to talk about what we are doing on 810.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay, and so I'm going to stop now. And she knows it all, and she's not the one.
Yeah, go ahead.
No?
No, she's a call to action. I'm just underscoring it.
Go ahead, Charlene.
Okay. Sarah, what's happening? SB 810 will be heard next January.
Right, so SB 810 did not make it out of Senate appropriations, which was a disappointment, but it's fine. The bill's still alive. And it will be heard next January. But that doesn't allow us to not be active now. We have a very short timeline in January. So right now, we have to prepare for a Senate vote and an Assembly vote in January that will be within weeks of one another. And that is not very much time to do it. So if we wait until January to start, that's way too late. We've got to be doing it now, getting our votes, getting our support list, and doing everything that Charlene is going to talk to you about.
Thank you, Sarah.
Very quickly, I'm Charlene Jones, Healthcare for All, Sacramento Valley, and League of Women Voters, and Grey Panthers. Sarah actually, I think, gave the call to action. I just wanted to underscore that. Thank you all for your time today. It's been a lengthy day. Oxygen isn't, I don't think we have any oxygen any longer. We'll adjourn soon. And all of our guests spoke passionately about the urgency of our circumstances. So I want to encourage you to, if you haven't already, join us. HCA Sacramento Valley and our partners who co-sponsor today are engaged in a campaign to educate and collect endorsements from every organization you know, every city council, board of supervisors that you're involved with. We have resources, we have tools, we're doing it here locally. Please sign up, there's a clipboard on the back there to help us out with writing letters, tabling, like what we're doing back there, visiting groups, giving presentations. Marty and I have a great PowerPoint slideshow we'd be happy to share. In fact, Marty's a great speaker. Hire her. Have her come to her groups. She's wonderful. If you're not in the mood to do what she's volunteering to do and have your body dragged to Dave Cox's office and expire in front of him, join us to do other things. Please come and help us. We're going to be talking to our own Sacramento County Board of Supervisors soon. The City of Sacramento has already endorsed. They endorsed in 2006, 2008. We're hoping to get another letter from them this year, but as Sarah said, it's urgent. So pitch in. And if you know of anybody else, have them pitch in too. Thank you.
Okay, before you leave, please leave your evaluations at the registration desk back there. Also, remember, on July 18th, we're going to be right back in this room, and there'll be economy and how to control costs and deliver quality health care with Lenny Goldberg. I also want to remind you, we meet every first Saturday of the month at 10 o'clock here in this room, except in July. So we're in this room every first Saturday of the month, so if you want to come down and join us, we appreciate that. We want to thank you all for coming today. We appreciate giving your time, and we hope to see you July the 18th. Thank you.
Thank you for your audiovisual and technical assistance.
You're quite welcome.
I don't know.